through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back in to Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Now we're going to dive into a conversation about the Seahawks position groups. This is based on a really cool quote by Michael Silver that's given me some, I guess, hope, a little bit of optimism here. Before I say that, I would like to shout out to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. In our last segment, I told a story about how a guy bailed on me for a date by clearly lying and saying he had to go to Nebraska for a variety of reasons. That makes no sense. Someone texted in from the 415. In fairness, I would go to Nebraska to avoid karaoke. You know what, 415? That is a fair point. I accept that. That's a very fair argument. All right. So let's get started right here. Michael Silver, in cut number 8, believes the Seahawks, who have struggled on defense, will only continue to get better.
I know the defense is ranked very low, and I know that they don't have a marquee pass rusher. But in big, big moments, look what that defense has done. The two stops against the Vikings to get Russell Wilson the ball. And, oh, by the way, 3 fourth-down conversions later, they pull that one out. And also the Patriots game, where Cam Newton got the Patriots right to the edge of the goal line. Look, Russell Wilson, who's already great, has elevated. I think that this is a defense that can get better. So they are really, really good now, but I think they can get better.
Now, there's a variety of reasons, Tom, to think that the Seahawks have room for improvement. First of all, they have playmakers on defense. The defense isn't playing up to, I guess, the resumes of some of those guys. And that just, in theory, means that you expect them to be better. Jamal Adams, he's an all-pro. Jaron Reed, he had 10 sacks, you know, 2 years ago. Bobby Wagner is Bobby Wagner, a perennial all-pro and pro bowler. So when you look at specific groups, let's break it down. If they're going to get better, as Mike Silver says, where will that improvement come from? Is it going to be the offense being better as a whole and just being enough to where the defense doesn't even matter? Or are we going to see improvement from the secondary, from the defensive line? So I'm going to go with buy, sell, or hold, Tom. You're going to play this game with me. Buy, sell, or hold on whether you believe there's going to be improvement from each group that I list. Are you ready?
Are you going to play too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to play by myself.
Oh, no, Tom. I'm too obsessed with myself to not play this game also. Okay.
I thought so.
Let's go with, I'm going to combine. It says safety, cornerback, separate. I'm going to say secondary. Are you buying that they're going to improve with the secondary?
I am going to say, I'm going to buy the secondary. Yes, they're improving because Jamal Adams is coming back. I think Ugo Amadi gets better with every game. Or we'll just say with the more reps he gets out there, the better he gets. So when we're playing a nickel, he's fine. I think Diggs has actually played well, but for whatever reason, his performance hasn't translated into like an overall encouragement or I guess encouraging thinking about the secondary. I haven't heard anybody say, well, we've got Quandre Diggs back there, so we're going to be fine. But maybe we should. Like him and Jamal Adams together, I kind of think Griffin is what he is, but I'll buy that they're going to get better. You?
Yeah, I do too. It's not just Adams returning. It's a chance for the entire secondary to play all together. I don't know if it was Week one might have been the only week that they were all out there together. I need to double check. There's been a little bit of crossover, but I mean, Diggs ejected from a game, and so he missed a game with this whole group. Quentin Dunbar missing 2 weeks, I think 3 and 4. Jamal Adams missing 2 weeks as well. Griffin's been out there, but again, like you've had kind of a mix of guys that you thought would be in this group. In week one, we thought it would be Adams, Dunbar, Diggs, Griffin, and then Marquise Blair is your nickel corner. You have either lost some of those guys in the case of Blair, or they just haven't been able to stay healthy and be out there. And in the case of Diggs, they missed a game because of being disqualified from a game. You kind of get a chance to actually have all these guys, with the exception of Blair, back together after the bye week for really, I think, the first time consistently since week one and maybe a little bit of two.
I think maybe for tomorrow, I might look into this. And if you've already looked into it, let me know. But have they been significantly better when they've played in nickel? I know Blair's not been there, but when they put Amadi in that spot, like, has it made a difference between their base defense and playing in nickel? Because we did talk a lot about that before the season. Like, has it made a difference in terms of the yardage allowed?
I don't know. I got to look that up. I know that they've been in nickel significantly more this year. But
the answer might not be yes.
Well, I don't even think it's that. I think it's because that's also been a passing defense. So even though they've been in nickel, can you blame being in a nickel defense as being a problem, you know, necessarily when you should be better at that? I don't know. We'll ask Jake that question. Go ahead and bookmark that one, Tom. Okay.
I did.
Let's get to the defensive line. Greatest area of concern easily for Brock Huard, who said that the big problem with them is just that their defensive line is not good. Michael Silver saying the Seahawks defense will only get better from here. Are you buying, selling, or holding on the defensive line?
I said earlier in the show that I think Alton Robinson will contribute. Oh, you know what, though, Harrison? I'm going to hold. I don't think that they get significantly better, but they don't get worse. I think that they stay basically where they are.
I don't know why I'm doing this. Literally, I have no evidence to back this up. I'm going to buy the idea that the defensive line is going to get better. I don't know why. It's one of those like gut feelings. Like if you were actually making a bet here, you'd be like, sure, this feels right. Let's go with it. It is maybe ill-advised. Like, they have given me no reason to think that they would be improving, but I don't know why. I just expect it to happen. Maybe it's Snacks Harrison. Maybe it's that Benson Mayoa, who I actually forgot to mention as a pretty strong free agent addition. Maybe it's that he's surpassed my expectations. Maybe it's that Jaron Reed improved last week. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I'm buying the idea that they're going to get better. I don't think I'm that optimistic a person. I think I'm actually typically a pessimist, but I'm buying this idea.
Well, plus you got your guy Green coming back. I don't know how much difference any one of those guys will make. Like, see, when I say hold, what I mean is I think that there will be games where they're worse, and there will also be games where they're better. So the net result is going to be basically nothing.
Now, let's look specifically at linebacker. You're going to get Jordan Brooks back after the bye week. I don't know exactly when, but he wasn't placed on the injured reserve list, which is good news. That would sideline him for a minimum of 3 weeks. Pete Carroll said that basically walking off the field together in that last practice before the game against the Vikings, that Brooks felt he was coming along quicker than he was expecting. So maybe we see Brooks sooner. I think Brooks is an upgrade over Cody Barton as far as just raw skill set. They clearly felt like Brooks would be capable of competing to start right away, letting him get some of those reps in training camp. I am buying that they can, I sound way too optimistic. I am buying that they can improve when Brooks gets back out there.
If this was actual stocks, I would sell because you're supposed to sell when you think it's peaking, when you think that stock
is peaking,
this is
the best the linebacker group is going to be.
I don't know how much better they can get. I mean, they may stay this way.
Yeah.
And it might be wise to hold. Like, KJ is having really what's turning out to be one of his best years. If it were to continue this way, it would certainly be one of his best years. Bobby Wagner looks essentially like his usual self. I guess, but God, is Jordan Brooks, if he comes back, going to actually make them better?
That's really what the question is. Does Jordan Brooks coming back improve the linebacker group?
Yeah, I don't know that I have any basis to say yes or no.
Right.
I'll hold on them because they could. I don't think they're going to get worse. I don't think their performance is going to go down, but I think it's going to stay the same. So I'll hold on these guys.
Now let's go ahead and look at the running backs. I'm jumping all around with the offense. You actually think that you expect to see more from Chris Carson. He hasn't had a 100-plus yard rushing game this year. He's been really productive when you just look at total yards from scrimmage, with more receptions in 5 weeks than he had in all of 2018 so far. He's just like 20 yards shy of that total yardage as well. Career highs in receiving touchdowns with 3. Now, do you think, I guess what I'm asking, do you think they're going to continue to use him in this way, or do you think we're going to see more of Chris Carson as a traditional running back, as Pete Carroll would say, in a classic fashion, after we return from the bye? You've got a tough stretch of games against Arizona, San Francisco, Buffalo, L.A., and then back with Arizona.
I don't think we're going to see a reversion to that. Like, they're gonna let Russ cook less. But there could be games here and there where the situation calls for that. Even if it's like halves of games, like Chris Carson just ends up taking over the third quarter of a game, and by the fourth quarter, nobody wants to tackle him, like that type of thing. I'll buy the running backs. I think they'll probably get more. What happened to Hyde, by the way? Has he been hurt?
He has been dealing with a shoulder injury. Mm-hmm.
Okay, dealing with a shoulder injury. I mean, we just got to look at DJ Dallas. His yards per carry were actually pretty good. I'll buy them now. I think they're going to get – I think you'll see – better performances from Carson and the group as a whole going forward.
Also, like, I know that the offense has been wildly effective, essentially being the way that they are right now, but it is hard for me to think that Pete Carroll is not just itching to, like, run all over someone. You know what I mean? Like, Pete Carroll is itching to face a team that is so bad against the run where he can just give the rock to Chris Carson and have him run all over the field. Like, this is a type of football that I feel like Pete Carroll's season will be incomplete if he doesn't just have a little bit of it. It's like on a cheat day where you're like, I'm not hungry. I have to have this. I feel incomplete without it.
I don't know if Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer ever felt any pressure to let Russ cook, but if they ever did, and they've actually let it happen, and they've proven that they're willing to do it. At some point, like you say, they'll be like, all right, well, we're running just because we're running now, because I just want to do it. Like, I've already let Russ cook the whole season. Even Russell Wilson won't care by then, because he will have proven that point. So, yeah, I buy the running game completely.
How about quarterback? Can Russell Wilson be any better than he's playing right now, leading that MVP conversation? He's got, 19 touchdowns through 5 weeks, 2-3 interceptions? It's his highest touchdown percentage of his career by quite a bit. He has, I think, a combined 72 completion percentage, something just insane. He is playing out of his mind. I don't want to call them off games, but he has had some games without 5 touchdowns. So, I mean, there's always that.
Terrible.
Terrible. Absolutely horrible. It's what we call regression.
I don't want to play this game anymore.
No?
I don't want to play this. No, too hard.
It's too hard? Too hard to decide whether you're...
Too hard. Oh, God, can he really...
How about this? Here's what I'll say. Russell Wilson going to be getting Philip Dorsett. He could end up not being an impact at all. I mean, we've talked about Josh Gordon coming back. Do you even need him? No, but you sure would want him. It feels like this wide receiver group is pretty set, with David Moore being even better than we thought he would be. David Moore clearly proving, hey, you were having that wide receiver 3 conversation without mentioning my name. We'll make sure you include it now, because I'm proving that I can be a deep threat. If you get Philip Dorsett back, there is a chance that he continues to add a speedy receiver like that. I mean, this kid was a first-round pick.
God, he's worked so hard this offseason, Stacey. He's put in the time with Jake Heaps, for God's sakes. I guess I have to buy. How could I not? I mean, he's been near perfect. By the way, when we say the quarterback position, are we including the play of Geno Smith?
I absolutely am. Yeah.
All right. Well, in that case, I'm definitely buying.
Yeah. I'm counting on Geno Smith just blowing everyone away in practice, too. I think he's got
okay.
Yeah. Tom, do you ever get kind of like offended that Jake has never taught us to be great quarterbacks? You know?
Yeah, he spent so much of his time with a person that isn't even on this show.
Exactly. How about your own co-host? Why don't you teach us to throw the rock around, you know?
Who's to say I couldn't be better than Russell? I mean, yet we haven't let me try.
I will say Jake tried teaching me how to become a perfect passer in the control room, but I think Salk got a little too nervous because I was just slightly inaccurate. So I think there was a little bit of worry that some damage to some sound equipment could be done, but I don't know. I think I've got a cannon for an arm. I just need someone to believe in me, is what I'm saying. All right, we've got some other ones to get to, but we can bounce back to this when we sum it up. For now, let's get to NFL headlines. Well, the Jets are in the news. They've released disgruntled running back Le'Veon Bell. Bell seems pretty okay with it. He tweeted, like a little hands praying emoji, which I'm taking as thank God I'm outside of this organization. I also have to credit Bruce Irvin with saying that Le'Veon Bell made fun of Jamal Adams, like kind of dissed Jamal Adams when Adams got out of New York to go to Seattle, essentially like forced a trade to go to Seattle. But now Le'Veon Bell's out of the organization, too. That organization is a hot mess. They are 32 in the league for a reason. I don't know how Adam Gase is still employed. I think it's an incredibly cruel thing to call for someone's job, and I kind of even regret doing it right now. But I don't understand Adam Gase. I don't.
What was the issue, though? Was it that he was not getting carries? I mean,
did he struggled last year. So I think that I am sure that to Le'Veon Bell, he's not being given the chances, and he's with a poorly run organization with a really bad offense. I think to Adam Gase and the Jets, they're probably thinking, well, you haven't performed, you know, with the contract that we have for you. So
this is his own doing. He forced his way out of Pittsburgh, and even his own offensive linemen called him out for doing that. So, you know what, man? If you didn't think the Steelers were treating you fairly, you went to a team that gave you your money, and now you don't like the way that they run their team, and now you're out again? I mean, at some point, his complaining is just getting him diminishing returns. I mean, he's cut off his nose to spite his face. Where is he going to go now that he's going to end up having that much more success after Frank Gore outplayed him during the summer? I mean, I think that it's possible to criticize him and put blame on him, even with the acknowledgement that the Jets are a mess and that they're incompetent. I think that this guy has done more damage to his own career by himself than any team.
Adam Gase was asked about it, basically saying like, hey, you know, how do you feel? What about the decision? And he just said, it is what it is. Our team is moving forward to Miami. He also added to the perception that he misused Bell, quote, it's irrelevant at this point. So,
amen.
I mean, I don't know. Le'Veon Bell has so much talent. I think that people labeled him as a drama queen or not a team player. And so that gets kind of at part of the conversation about his play. But you can't also put some of it on the offensive, on the head coach in the offense that you were in. You know what I mean? I think people say like, well, Bell deserved it. He had an attitude. But it's not like he suddenly became a bad player. How is that not partly the head coach's fault?
I don't know about that. You know what? Then what's the problem? Is it his offensive line that they can't block?
I think it's a mix of things. I wonder if Le'Veon Bell being with not the Jets would have been as bad as he was. I don't think so. I think the Jets are a very dysfunctional organization. I think there's a chance he could have been better with a better run organization. I mean, it's hard to look
at
the Jets.
He was with the Steelers, but he chose to not go with that. What can I say?
I know. It's hard for me to not blame the Jets a little bit here.
Of course they deserve some blame.
Cardinals pass.
Soon enough, Le'Veon Bell and Adam Gase will be able to start their own team or league or whatever. So.
Well, that would be kind of
cool. Because they'll both be without jobs.
I mean, I'm definitely tuning in there. Cardinals pass rusher Chandler Jones will officially miss the rest of the season with a torn bicep. Let's talk about the NFC West as a whole for a minute here, because this is obviously part of this grander conversation. When we were at the start of the season, I saw the NFC West as follows. The San Francisco 49ers are the team that is going to be leading the conversation atop the division, and you have to beat them to get that number one seed. The Arizona Cardinals are going to be the Cinderella story that can swoop in and surprise you, and maybe they only go 8-8, but there's a chance that they absolutely beat you on at least one of your meetings. And then the Rams, who cares about the Rams? They're going to be at the bottom. Well, guess what, Tom? I was incredibly wrong with that prediction. I honestly, so were a lot of other people. The Rams have suddenly become the team that is nipping at your heels to try to get back into the top of the NFC West. The 49ers have fallen to the bottom. The Cardinals, I think, still have a chance to upset you, but it really, really hurts them to lose essentially their best player, certainly their best player on defense, this early in the season. Are they still a threat to you in the NFC West?
Oh, sure. I mean, they're a they're a direct threat in any game, even if they're not good. You know, even in years where they're not good. This year they are. God, I'm thinking about what is the Seahawks equivalent to the loss of Calais Campbell?
I would say Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, that's probably right. Probably Bobby Wagner. It would be the same thing as losing him. If we're doing buy, sell, or hold on Arizona, mm-hmm. I'm still buying them. But, God, I feel a lot better about playing them without Campbell out there, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, Chandler Jones had a bajillion sacks of Russell Wilson the last time the Cardinals played here, I think. Not a bajillion. I think he had three, but...
Right.
Got to double check.
Four, five.
All right.
Six.
Yeah. 17. Who knows? Who can say? Dan Quinn, recently fired from the Atlanta Falcons, had an open letter to the city of Atlanta. This dude is just... How do you not like Dan Quinn? He said, "How fortunate am I that I closed this chapter the very same way I opened it, with gratitude." He says, "Being the head coach of your Atlanta Falcons has been the privilege of a lifetime. I can't express my appreciation enough to Arthur Blank for the opportunity to represent this organization for the past six seasons." He goes on to just write about basically everything that he's grateful for. And he ends it with, "I know there are great things ahead for this team, and I'll continue to root like heck for them and for you. I hope I represented your team with the grace and character you deserve. In brotherhood, Dan Quinn." My heart is breaking. Tom, the NFL is a cutthroat business, and there are times when you understand why someone's fired. The Falcons had quite the fall from grace, whether it's injuries, whether it's coaching, who knows, probably a combination of everything. But there are sometimes guys that you really root for, and you're still heartbroken when it doesn't work out, even if you understand why they decided to part ways.
Yeah, I mean, in him rooting, I'm trying to think, him, Quinn rooting for the Falcons going forward is like me getting fired and still rooting for you and Jake to do well. And would I?
Tom.
Oh, of course I would. Of
Come
course
on.
I would root for Jake and Stacy.
All right, let's see what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacy, brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
It's the Rays versus the Astros for ALCS Game 4 tonight at 6 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, we're going to revisit some three questions next. Now, I saw some people on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line disagreeing as to whether or not you would add another bye week to mitigate the frustration of postponed games. I want you to let us know, if you will, text 710-710. That's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Should the NFL add another bye week at the end of the season? We'll get to that next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
The NFL's made a couple schedule changes because of positive COVID tests around the league. I would say the most negatively impacted team, despite not being a team that has had a million positive tests, has been the Denver Broncos, who essentially lost their bye week. Their bye week was originally supposed to be, I think week six. Instead, they had a game moved to week six. And so after practicing for the week in week five, we're told that that would be their bye. So it obviously prompts a question of whether or not another bye week should be added to the schedule to mitigate the frustration of postponed games. Now, I asked you guys on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, to chime in here. Tom, here's what folks are saying. Number one, there should actually permanently be an additional bye week because more NFL football. But also it just gives additional rest because of injuries, Thursday night football, et cetera. So maybe just using COVID as an excuse to try that out, but then keeping it as a change moving forward, essentially, is what I'm thinking this text is saying.
So keeping 16 games, but just adding an extra bye.
Yes. And then they say the extra bye week should be scheduled starting next week, but it's throughout the season. So rather that everyone gets an extra bye week at the end of the season. So if you made the playoffs, you get a bye week no matter what. They're saying just have it be every year you get two byes, essentially. throughout the
They tried that in 93. They did 18 weeks with two buys, and I don't remember why they decided not to after that. Like, it seems like a, even back then it would have seemed like a good thing to keep. I really don't know.
Someone else saying that they would add another bye week selfishly because they think it'll help the Hawks in their playoff run. As a reminder, only the top seed in a regular season. I mean, it's happening this season. Who knows if there's going to be another bye week at the end of the year. But hypothetically, it is supposed to be right now that only the number one seed in each conference gets a bye week. The number two seed will play in the wild card round of the playoffs. So technically, if the Seahawks are bested or drop a couple games in a tough stretch, that would give them a bye week no matter what, because otherwise they'd only get it being the top seed. Right now, they're technically the top seed.
In that case, though, it's almost an argument against it, because I only want the number one seed to benefit from an extra bye week, right? Like, they deserve that for being the number one. I don't want the 2 through 7s to benefit by having... Like, if you given everybody an extra bye, say week 15, right, and then the number one seed is the only one that gets the bye 3 weeks later, that bye doesn't really matter that much at that point. So I don't know how – I would need to sit down and, like, work out how I think all that should be divided. But in general, I think it is a healthy idea to give everybody just one extra week's rest.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and get to the second question on here. Is there a Seahawk that you think will improve significantly as the season goes on? Tom, I believe you said Chris Carson, right?
I said Alton Robinson early in the show, but I did say that Carson, yeah, I think that his breakout game or games have certainly not come yet. And I think that they will come at some point this season where it's like, oh, yeah, this team is capable of having a devastating run game in addition to all the passing they have. And by the way, them reminding the league of that fact will be pretty scary, because defensive coordinators will be thinking, uh-oh, you know, they're already terrific at passing the ball. Look at the year Russell Wilson's having. And they can run the ball too. Uh-oh. I think that, yes, the running game in Carson will be better going forward.
Absolutely see that happening. I said Jaron Reed, who had a great game last week, could improve as the season goes on. And also Quentin Dunbar. I'm leaning on Jake's opinion for this one. I just think it was a really great observation. He said that he felt like Dunbar played with more confidence in his second outing. And then Dunbar was obviously injured and missed 2 weeks, so he didn't get a chance to get back out there. So I'm wondering if for Quentin Dunbar, in a new system, all it takes is just kind of being on the field for a game or two before he starts to become the player that the Seahawks saw when they traded for him this offseason. And maybe that's what it takes for him, right? Just playing with this secondary. You're with a completely new team. I feel like sometimes we don't give players, you know, credit as far as, you know, adjusting to a new team. Jamal Adams with a completely new team. Quentin Dunbar with a completely new team. Quandre Diggs in his first full season with this team. We've only seen these guys together as a full secondary for 5 weeks of the season, and even then they haven't been on the same on the field together all at once, really outside of week one.
If Dunbar hadn't been hurt at all and hadn't had the legal issues that he had over the summer, by now, would you have expected him to be fully assimilated and ready to go?
Yeah, I think I would have felt that by week five, were he to be on the field for all 5 weeks, yeah, I would have expected that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I agree.
All right. So this is actually a bit of a switcheroo. Initially, we had a question about Tyler Lockett, but we both agree on it. Boo, that's boring. So instead, I'm going to have a question about MLB changes, because I know we're going to disagree on this one, Tom. The MLB made changes this season. Which would you keep and which would you get rid of? I already know which one you want to get rid of, and I love this rule. So I'm going to go ahead and start with it. Runner on second and extras. Do you keep it or do you get rid of it? The answer is, of course you keep it, Tom. Why not? Runner on second and extras. Let's keep this from going to 13 or 14 in extras. I'm okay with it. I mean that for the regulars or for the postseason, because they actually dropped the rule in the postseason. Tom, you hate this rule, but I don't know why you do. It's exciting.
Hold on. I've actually come around on this one a little bit.
Really?
A little bit,
expecting
yeah.
That.
Let's. Can we move it to the 11th inning instead of doing it immediately in the 10th?
No. Absolutely
not. Can we play one normal inning of extra inning baseball first?
Nope. I don't make the rules. I don't make the
rules. You're not going to compromise with me at all?
Absolutely not.
Right down there,
it starts in extras or it doesn't.
Well, then forget it.
You don't want it at all. Then I'm never watching baseball again.
I'm more okay with that now. Actually, the way I would do it, I would start the runner at first because I don't like the idea of bunt him over, sack fly, wins the game. It's too easy. You want to start with a runner on. Like the percentages of games ending with the leadoff runner getting to first base anyway is pretty high. Mm. So start him at first base. Make him do a little work.
All right. I'll accept it.
Modify the rule. Don't get rid of it.
How about a DH? I actually think runner on third. Why not? I want to see someone steal home. That's what I say. You know what? Start it with a potential grand slam. Put a runner on every base. That's how I feel about it, Tom. Let's make it exciting. How about a DH in the NL? I think I've been fine with universal DH, but I have grown up watching a team in the AL West, and so I'm biased here. If you're Mike Lewis over on Cairo Knights, you think that the DH is essentially a meaningless position and that there are players who are objectively bad at many things except for having at-bats. He doesn't think that Edgar Martinez would have lasted like 3 months on a National League roster. It's blasphemous.
That's not true.
Yeah, well, I'll let him know you said that.
You already have. I'm better think.
Do you want universal DH?
I don't really care about this one as much. I mean, there are some pitchers who can hit, but that's never really bothered me. Yeah, go ahead. Keep the universal DH. Fine.
This one isn't in here, but I'm going to... Oh, it is. I know that you loved this one. Tom, a champion of the 7-inning doubleheaders. You are
big time.
The biggest fan of this change. Do you want to see it moving forward?
Yes, and not only in doubleheaders, but in every single game. Seven.
You want seven? Hang on a minute. You don't want a runner on second because it's not like a traditionalist kind of baseball thing, but you want 7-inning games for every
game. I just don't want the game to end in a cheap way. That's all. I mean, if we had 7-inning games and you wanted to do that in the eighth, I think it's the same problem. But 7-inning games, yeah, I just think it's a better rhythm to it. I mean, watching a couple of them this year with the Mariners, I just thought it worked a heck of a lot better. You get your starters owning more real estate in every single game. It's quicker. It doesn't last 3.5 hours in the middle of July. It's pointless to do that. If you wanted to go back to like 9 in the playoffs, maybe we could talk about that. But 7 innings just had a nice zip to it. I loved it.
Tom, hear me out. 6 innings. In extras, you go to a runner on third. Yeah. And you get to change.
As opposed to what? 9 innings?
Yeah.
And what we have now?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right. I'm glad we did that. We sum it up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Tom Wassel, Stacey Ross with you here right now. Now, we started our show by checking in on the Seahawks 2020 rookie class. When they initially drafted this class after day three of the draft, Tom, you gave them an A-. Now, after 5 weeks to start this season, despite the fact that two guys have been injured, two of them starting the season on the NFI list, you're still giving them that grade. They're still an A- draft class to you. Why is that?
Well, I'm still giving the draft an A- because I think they did the right things at the time. If you were asking me, like, how have all 7 of those guys performed so far? I can't give that an A-.
Right.
Like, that's
right.
Just not going to happen. The top two guys are hurt, for one thing, you know, and one of them's barely played. One of them hasn't played at all. After that, you know, you've got 2 or 3 guys that have contributed. You've got Freddie Swain, Alton Robinson, and, of course, Damian Lewis. Now, every year, I think in any draft, you're going to have at least two guys, if not three, that end up not being in the NFL really as regular players or starters or even depth pieces at all. Like, that's just the nature of that beast. Even if you get an A, you know, somebody grades you an A like I did for the draft, because you do the right thing at the time. Who's available? What position? How is that person scouted, etc.? But they've gotten some contributions so far. They've showed, or at least Alton Robinson showed, that he belongs on a field going forward and probably can and will contribute this year a little bit. I mean, he's only appeared in three games, so had he had more reps for whatever reason, I think he probably would have contributed even a little bit more. DJ Dallas has a hard time getting on the field because he's playing behind a star player who's probably going to get paid big time this offseason, whether it's by Seattle or somebody else. So it's tough for him to – I mean – in order to call DJ Dallas a successful draft pick right now, does that mean that he needed to supplant Chris Carson? Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's being unreasonable. Mm-hmm. He's just not there yet. But I think in time he could. I wouldn't write that off yet. So I'm still pretty comfortable with what they've got. Yeah.
I guess I just...
You?
It becomes a bit of a red flag when I look up and see the top two names out. Right? When I see linebacker Jordan Brooks taken in the first round, defensive end Daryl Taylor taken in the second, I think that there are a number of Seahawks fans that get a little bit of PTSD whenever a top pick doesn't pan out or is injured. I think a lot of that is tied to Malik McDowell, which was a sad situation for all parties involved, for Malik McDowell most of all, right? But I think that people that are fans of this team have, I think, a very, very short leash when it comes to how long it takes before they call a top pick by the Seahawks a bust. And it's unfair for anyone to call Jordan Brooks a bust. It's unfair for anyone to call Daryl Taylor a bust. Daryl Taylor hasn't even had a chance to hit the field. It is way too early and not a service to him at all to call him a bust. That doesn't mean I haven't seen it. That doesn't mean I haven't seen those comments. You know what I mean? I think that there are fans that see other teams, like the Baltimore Ravens, who took Patrick Queen after you. They see him AFC Player of the Week or Defensive Player of the Week, and they think, like, you could have had that guy. I think that there are other situations that go into that. Would Jordan Brooks look great in week five had he been playing weeks 1 through 5 because there was an immediate need for a middle or outside linebacker? There's a chance, yeah. There's certainly a chance if he were to be given 5 weeks to adjust and grow to the NFL because they didn't have much of an offseason. He hasn't had that, so it feels early to say that. I know that's not what you're arguing, but I understand where the frustration comes from for Seahawks fans when top picks don't pan out. And when I look overall at a draft class, I think the Seahawks have nailed it on several picks over the past couple years, including guys that are no longer here like Frank Clark. I think, though, that when the top picks aren't successful, people get worried because that could have been three picks. You know, that could have been part of a trade. Not to mention that you traded away 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams. So you need the first-round picks that you got this year, linebacker Jordan Brooks, defensive end Daryl Taylor, to make an impact. You need them to do that because you aren't going to get another bite at the apple that early for 2 years. So I love seeing contributions from Damian Lewis, and I love the fact that you have seen promise from 4 of the guys that you drafted. I think the concern about Brooks and Taylor almost outweigh that. And it's unfair, but that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, if that's the case, then how come you're not ready to join me in the darkness of the Rashad Penny bus conversation?
Because I think that it is... still, I don't like calling players busts when they've been dealing with injuries. I know that's how you feel, too. And I know that you feel like, well, Penny has had a chance and he hasn't impressed me.
Yeah, we're going on 3 years now with him.
I don't like doing it with Taylor and Brooks.
It's like, you know, a couple weeks.
Yeah, I don't like doing it. I don't like calling a player a bust. And I don't know why I feel like it's too early with Penny, but I do feel like it's too early. I mean, it feels like he was getting into a rhythm last year. They were getting that 1-2 punch at running back, and then he tore his ACL. Like, what would weeks, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, have looked like if he were healthy.
Well, nobody's well, I'm not saying nobody, but I'm not doubting that he has the talent to be an NFL player. But there's a lot of guys who have the talent to be an NFL player. I mean, staying healthy is part of being a bust does not mean that you did something that you're culpable for screwing up your career. In my mind, it's and I know like bust does have sort of a finger pointy connotation to it. Maybe that's not fair, but I guess the problem with Penny is he's 24 going on 25 years old. Like, when is he going to blossom? Right. We all know running backs are basically done at 30 or 31 anyway. So when's he going to blossom? He's missed basically 3 years of his career. He's barely played since college. So, I mean, if he were to suddenly just be gangbusters whenever he does come back, that would shock me. I mean, would you be comfortable going forward without Chris Carson and saying Rashad Penny, we're banking on him to be our starter next year?
No. Well, that gets into a separate conversation where I don't know if I agree with this, but I think you got to pay Chris Carson. I mean, I think you got to do it. He's a special running back.
That's an argument for paying him, certainly, unless you want to, you know, go on just drafting, which I would do anyway, but I don't know if you're going to find a starter doing that immediately.
Yeah. All right, Bob, Dave, and Moore coming up next. Thank you guys so much for joining us here. This has been Tom, Jake, and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.